Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Creating Structure podcast. I'm John Wheaton, your host, as always. Good to have you. My guest today, David Raskoski, account representative at Alloy Fasteners, Inc., and experienced in the fastener industry. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, John. I'm very happy to be here. Just join you.
Absolutely a pleasure to have you. So as typical, I'd like you to tell people who you are, what you do, where you're from. Give us a little bit of your background, we'll get moving.
Okay. Well, John, I'm based out of the Charlotte, North Carolina area. Work here out of my home. I travel up and down the East Coast, really from northernmost point, probably Philadelphia, all the way down to Miami. I also include Ohio and Chicago and Alabama into that sales territory. But I've been in the fastener business for 34 years, primarily selling fasteners for building enclosure systems. So that's going to include metal buildings, metal decking, roofing, windows, doors, hurricane panels. Most of my expertise, however, though, is in the curtain wall and storefront industry.
That's good. And that appeals to our audience in a variety of ways. David, did you grow up in North Carolina?
I did not. I actually grew up in New York State, a little town called Esopus, about 2 hours north of the city, right on the Hudson River. Wound up down here in North Carolina. My dad worked for IBM. So that's how I wound up in Charlotte. But I've been living down here primarily my whole life. I was 17 when I moved down. So I've been down here. I consider myself a Southerner.
I got you. So 17 years old, but like many born elsewhere. And you went to University of North Carolina?
I did. I graduated in 1985 from UNC Charlotte with a degree in business.
Did you have any idea when you were going through college and when you graduated, what it was you would be doing?
No, I didn't. You know, when I was in school, I did work part-time for a local trucking company. So I thought, well, maybe I will, you know, explore, you know, management opportunities within the trucking industry. So I bounced around between that, insurance, selling MRO supplies, you know, for about the first 4 years out of school before I finally focused on and landed with my first fastener manufacturer, which was Star Expansion out of Mountainville, New York. Worked for them for a few years, realized that, hey, you know what? I really like this business. I like the fastener aspect. It's, you know, it's can be some detailed work when you're specifying fasteners and things like that. But Star wasn't a very financially fit company. So I wound up, after a couple of years, going to work for a company called Fabco Fastening System, which was my introduction into the metal building industry. You know, with Fabco, you know, I called on American Buildings, I called on Butler Buildings, you know, all those metal prefab buildings. That business eventually was purchased, and it was blended in with the Elko business. So I was brought over to Elko Construction Products to merge those two product lines together. So some of the product lines in the Elko line today are old Fabco lines. Elko eventually was purchased by DeWalt. That was probably around the 2011-2012 timeframe. And in 2018, DeWalt, they eliminated my position. I was the sales director for Elko. And like all big corporations, you know, they start looking at the number of people they have and trying to trim. So I wound up getting caught up in that. Had the opportunity, though, to kind of sit back and decide what I wanted to do. I was in a position where I didn't have to go to work immediately. So, you know, talking to a few people, Alloy Fasteners was my largest customer at the time when I left Elko. And, you know, I liked the idea of getting back out into the field. You know, that's kind of how I learned this business, how I grew up in this business, you know, calling on engineers, calling on, you know, installers, getting on job sites, you know, calling on people that are specifying the fasteners. And I wanted to get back to that. You know, my job, you know, pretty much came spreadsheets and conference calls. And I'm not happy sitting in the office. I like to be out in the field. So that's when I decided to come over to Alloy Fasteners. And a little bit of background on Alloy. We're headquartered in Cranston, Rhode Island. And we are a fastener distributor, importer, and manufacturer. We have our own manufacturing facility where we do make a lot of stainless steel, a lot of assembly type screws, type ABs, type Fs, socket head cap screws, self drillers, that type of thing. And we're very concentrated on what we do. We're not a typical distributor that goes out and calls on every every trade out there. You know, I'm not calling on brick masons. I'm not calling on drywallers. I spend 100% of my time in a curtain wall and storefront industry. That's all I do. Other markets that we're in, we also service the marine industry, any outdoor recreational type products, that type of thing. Those industries that have high corrosion concerns, that's where we spend our time. We have branches in Tennessee. We got one in Missouri. We got one in Indiana, headquartered in Rhode Island. We got a warehouse in North Carolina and also one out in California.
Wow. Got a bunch of notes already. Quick bookmark. Go back. When you mentioned Star Expansion, forgive my ignorance. Did that have anything to do with the Star Anchor? Remember that? Did you ever get that precast Star Anchor?
That was it. That was it. The PD insert anchor.
PD is it.
You know where I sold most of those?
Where?
Into the people that made the concrete burial vaults.
Really?
Because that's what they cast into the side of those vaults so they could lower on into the ground.
Wow. So dead people.
So all the Wilbur burial vault places out there that make those concrete vaults, I called on all of those.
Wow. So dead people and ribbon windows. Yeah, that's a great combination. Well, the reason I bring up Star Anchors, there may be some engineers listening. And certainly, if there's any clients or former clients from Harman, Baltimore was really big on that Star Anchor. Harman Baltimore, they discovered that. Pete Ballone and some other guys I used to work with. And I remember, you know, that was back in the day where we were just calculating the prying tension on a T-anchor on a ribbon window and then using a safety factor before. I remember give me the data. Like, engineers need data, right? What's the ultimate pullout? There was really no design guide for that. But we wound up using a lot of Star Anchors, similar to, you know, Richmond spot anchors with the little hook tie, the little ferrule anchors. So that's a great history. Is that anchor still out there?
I don't know. I mean, you know, Star closed down in the early 2000s. So okay. I don't know if somebody purchased that product line or that from them, or I have no idea. I don't see it around, but
there's a lot of ribbon windows and curtain wall sill anchors on precast that are attached with those little Star inserts. That's awesome. So you said that alloy fastener, let me make sure I got this. You guys purchase and distribute and import, but you also produce as well?
You're correct.
Yes. All of it.
Yep.
Okay. That's great to know. And you mentioned you're on the East Coast. You're on the East Coast and your territory is pretty big. In fact, I'm speaking from Ohio, so I'm glad you're there. But you said, I was in Tennessee, Missouri, Indiana, North Carolina, California. So are you national or are you like East, Midwest, and then West Coast?
Well, myself, you know, John, I don't have a sales territory. I pretty much go wherever I need to go in the country. They, Alloy, you know, after being in this business for 30 some odd years, they pretty much gave me a full rein of to go where I need to go to generate business. But, you know, there's plenty to do on the East Coast. There is no reason for me to be traveling out West, but we do have people that do cover the West Coast for us as well.
I see. You guys cover mountain states as well?
Yep. Yep.
So you'll cover anywhere in the United States?
Yep. Any place that, you know, they're fabricating or installing, you know, curtain wall systems. That's where we're going to be.
Well, that's great. Let's hone in on that, that you spend one, you know, the Creating Structure podcast is about creating structure, like in the built world, and then creating structure in people's lives, both professionally and personally. And fasteners, I guess I would say they're the unsung hero of the industry. And we know as engineers and you know, as a fastener guy, how important they are. So you're 100% focused on a curtain wall and storefront. Is that only glazed aluminum facade systems? Are you also panel systems, GFRC, UHPC? Like, is it anything cladding or mainly glazed aluminum systems?
It's anything cladding, any type of build, you know, exterior building cladding.
So how do you go about what you do? You mentioned, I really like you, like, I want to get back out in the field. So how do you go about what you do? Who's contacting whom first? Tell us how it works.
Well, John, most of the time, it's my initial contact with a prospective customer. You know, some of these, you know, customers I may find through referral from other customers. You know, we do a lot of business with the fabricators. So a lot of these fabricators, you know, they're buying the fasteners to assemble their pattern, their product or their systems, but it's got to be installed by somebody else. So a lot of times I'm working on both ends of it. I may be working on the assembly side of it. And then I'm also working with the installer out in the field on the fasteners and the anchors he's going to need to install that onto the building. But most of it, you know, John, to be honest with you, it's a lot of cold calling, you know, and when people think of sales and they think of cold calling, you know, I think people sometimes get cold feet, but I love to cold call. I love to walk into places. It's something, you know, I've had some of my best meetings on a cold call where you just, your timing is right and you walk in the door. I use LinkedIn a lot, you know, as far as focusing on people, you know, product managers at certain companies that I might want to be targeting. You know, most of my work is done with product managers, or should I say project managers. You know, but I also call, you know, as you experience, I also call on the engineering firms, you know, come in and do presentations there. I like to keep in touch with the engineering firms because a lot of times you have problems out in the field that you might need some assistance on fasteners. You know, and I call on the fabricators and I call on the end users. So I try to cover from the beginning all the way through the end of this process.
You saw a big smile on my face when you said you like cold calls. You're speaking my language. I like cold calls too. It takes a certain mentality to like cold calls. One of our biggest accounts in the history of our company was a cold call from a magazine article and me going to Seattle for the first time. And we did, hundreds of thousands of hours work.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in a second because I would like to maybe get some insights for some people out there who are less comfortable with cold calls. But I was going to ask you, is it a relationship business or is it a product business or is it both? Do you focus on the relationship with the people or the products, or are you focusing on a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. You know, initially it's got to be about the products, you know, getting the products in the hands, you know, that they need to get these systems assembled and installed. You know, from there, I like to build that relationship to where I am their go-to guy on the fastener side of the business, you know, to build that trust that they understand that if I have a condition and I'm not quite sure what I need to use on that, I know David can refer a fastener to me, help me specify that fastener in, and it'll be something that will be accepted by engineering. It's something that I feel comfortable that's going to perform in that application. I'm not going to go home and worry about it. You know, so it's kind of a combination of both.
Can I buy an Elko Drillflex from you? Or is that sold directly from somebody else?
No, that all Elko Drillflex goes through distribution. You know, so, you know, we happen to be the largest Elko distributor in the country. You know,
okay.
That, you know, for the Drillflex product, kind of that's how I kind of wound up at Alloy. But yeah, that's, you know, when I came to work for Alloy, you know, prior with Elko, I spent years helping to develop the product, you know, the product that's out in the marketplace, the BiFlex, the TapFlex. Those are all projects I worked on when I was at Elko.
Yeah.
And then we took that and we went out to engineering firms and we had, you know, we talked to engineers about this product. We talked to our distribution base and set up all our distribution and trained them to go after that. So it was just a natural progression for me to say, hey, I spent, you know, 30 years doing this. Why don't I go out now and work with the people that actually buy and install this product? You know, they're the ones that really need the knowledge of this product on what to use and what not to use. And, you know, I really kind of find out that when I walk into these places, you know, some of these project managers are very, very, you know, up to date on what they can use in their window systems and their curb wall systems, what fasteners can be used, what can't be used. But there's also a lot of younger people coming up that aren't that familiar with it, you know, who just think, well, you know, a screw is a screw. It really doesn't make a difference. Whatever I need to put it together, yeah, we'll go down to the hardware store and buy it. But that's not the case.
They haven't had the hydrogen embrittlement and stress corrosion cracking conversation yet, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I was around, I mean, I'm dating myself a little bit, but I was around when I worked at PPG as an engineer when, you know, I'd walk out in the shop first few times, walked out in the shop and the fab manager there was like, you need to see this. And the reinforcing that was attached to the stick wall web of the mullion, every third fastener head was torqued off because we were using tech screws. And CDC, I think Charles Cliff, to his credit, uh-huh. and there's probably others, he was a big driver, I believe, a number of us, but it came to me. I wasn't a developer, but I remember seeing the Elko drill flex. I think Kevin McClinic may have even had a hand in that, but I remember that, you know, we want a ductile shank and we want a hardened tip and something that won't bust off. And here's this SAE J429 grade 5, like a true grade 5 screw that could handle. And people may, like, if we geek out on this, people may be like, why are you talking about this? Because it is so important that, like, to your point, the development of that, a screw is not a screw is not a screw. It has a specific mechanical property, correct?
Correct. Yeah, you know, John, what you have is when you introduce aluminum into your application, you know, and it can be aluminum attached to steel, or it can be aluminum with a hardened steel fastener. If that gets wet, as you know, it creates hydrogen. There's a galvanic reaction that creates hydrogen. And out of that, that hydrogen will attack that fastener, particularly if it's a hardened fastener. And if you install it, if you crack it, now you're allowing someplace for that hydrogen to get inside that fastener, and it will take that fastener and it will cause the core to become brittle. And when that cork becomes brittle, now it can't hold design loads. And when it breaks, all that design load on that fastener shifts to the next one. You know, and then that fastener, if that becomes brittle, then that one breaks, and then it just goes down the line. And next thing you know, you have fasteners that are breaking on a building, you know, panels falling off buildings, you know, systems leaking and things like that. So it takes that ductility of a grade 5 or an 18-8 stainless. Now, 18-8 stainless is a ductile product as well.
Absolutely.
Either grade 5 or stainless, neither one of them is hard enough to drill steel. So what you have to do is create that part with a hardened steel point that can drill and tap steel so that can be used as a drill screw.
Yeah, it's just so important. Like you say, also that the first time we actually spec'd the 300 series in 18-8 stainless, I think it was on Philadelphia Airport, but we found that SFS Stadler, that Oop. SX fastener that had like the crimped tip in it.
I remember those old bimetals like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but to your point, you know, the hydrogen embrittlement, stress corrosion cracking is a big deal. And for all the purchasers out there, specifiers, purchasers, engineers, and most of the engineers know, you know, like, let's say structural engineering and the art and science of structural engineering, there's the component that calculates the reaction and you know, the deflection and the moments and all those things. But there's multiple components of structural engineering. And one of them is making sure that you've specified the right grade of material and not, you know, not some knockoff, because mechanically, the mechanical part is equally important as the structural part, whether it's the right screw or the isolation of the screw or the isolation of the anchor to the mullion, depending on the similar metals and all that stuff. You have to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. So I'm really glad you brought up the, you know, proper materiality and all that stuff. Very important.
Because there's materials out there that I see being used a lot. You know, I see people using 410 stainless steel. 410 is something, again, that should never be used in aluminum.
No.
You know, when you're attaching aluminum, you want a fastener with a core hardness of Rockwell 34 or below. Well, a standard steel hardened drill screw is 39. 410 stainless is about 41 to 43. So you're getting, you know, pretty hard product that can be easily cracked when it's installed. Now, I tell my customers all the time, but when I do lunch and learns, I say, if you send me a list of what you're looking for, you know, your fastener schedule, if you have standard drill screws or you have 410 stainless on that, expect a phone call from me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to sell that product to you until I know where it's going. Sometimes it's okay, metal to metal application or an interior application. But I tell them I'm not going to, you know, sell you something blind, you know, unless I know exactly where it's going and it's going to perform for that application.
Yeah, similar, you know, there's a few banned words here at Wheaton Sprague in our vocabulary, and there's a few banned materials and 400 stainless is a band material. Yeah. We cannot use it for anything. I don't care, regardless of like whether the customers will have used this before or not. Like, you're not doing them a favor. You're actually putting them at risk and yourself at risk. Like, I would walk away from a job if somebody forced a 400 series stainless, because any engineer that approves that on a curtain wall application doesn't know what they're doing. Really.
Right. Absolutely. So, and a lot of times when you reach out to a supplier, you know, if they're not versed in, you know, what you are actually trying to assemble or attach, and you ask for stainless steel, they're going to gravitate to 410.
Yeah.
You know, 410 is great on a metal building, but in a curtain wall system, right, like you said, it should never be present. And I've actually had on several occasions where people have, you know, gone out and bought the 410 stainless, you know, and when I find out, you know, how much they paid for it, I'm like, guys, you got to look into this, because 18-8 stainless steel bimetals are not this inexpensive. And they look into it and find out it's 410. It's like, okay, guys, you got to stop right now.
Yeah.
You got to rethink what you're doing. And here's why.
Yeah. No, I hear you. So just.
And those project managers are usually pretty grateful.
Yeah. So just for clarity to the audience, and a lot of our audience will know this, but if you don't, we're talking about if you're going to buy a steel self-drilling fastener, it needs to be a biflex or a drill flex, something that's ductile with a hardened tip. And the same thing with a stainless. It needs to be a 300 series stainless. It needs to have a hardened tip. It needs to have a ductile shank. You're gonna be good there. If you want to install 400 series, you're gonna see problems and stains and yeah, and broken screws here and there. I want to go back. Then I'm like gonna jump all over. I want to go back to cold calls. We may have some people listening that are salespeople or young professionals or whatever. I too like cold calls. It's an adventure. Do you have a certain mindset that you approach cold calls with, or do you shoot from the hip well with your intuition, or is there anything or not that you could communicate that might help some with the fear of cold calls?
Well, yeah, first of all, you know, they're not strictly cold calls. You know, I spend a few minutes researching the company. I take a look at what is it that they're doing. I like to take a look at the projects that they've completed in the past. And, you know, so I've got a pretty good idea of what they're doing. Who's, you know, if it's somebody that's installing, I look into whose systems are they installing. Sometimes I can bring a link into that. A lot of times through LinkedIn, I'll find out who their project managers are, so I can go in and ask for somebody specifically. But, you know, when I go in, you know, John, my ultimate goal is really just to introduce myself. You know, a lot of times you might get 5 minutes if you get that much. Sometimes you go in and they say, hey, you know what? We really need to talk. Come on in and sit down. We have some questions. Or sometimes you walk in and you don't get anywhere and you get a name to call on. But the key with the cold call and to make it productive is to make sure that you follow up on those. You know, to make a cold call, not being able to really make a connection with anybody, and then never approaching that again is really just a waste of time. You know, I always look at this job, you know, when people ask me, I say, my job's easy. It's showing up and following up.
There you go. Breaking it down, keeping it simple.
If you do both of those, you'll be a success, because there's a lot of people that don't do that. Follow up after that call.
Follow up. But when you, when you do a cold call, are you calling in advance to say, hey, I'm David Raskoski, I'm going to be stopping in, talk, or are you literally opening up the door and saying, can I talk to somebody here? I saw you guys on LinkedIn. I sell fasteners. Like, what, or is it a combination of both?
It's mostly just walking in the door cold, you know, and introducing myself and asking, you know, hey, is there a project manager available that I might be able to talk to? You know, just kind of introduce them. Hey, I'm, you know, I work for a fastener manufacturer distributor for the curtain wall storefront industry. Is there a project manager available? You know, a lot of times, yeah, somebody will come out and speak to you for a few minutes. And like I said, sometimes it's, you know, you get the cold reply saying, well, there's really nobody available. Well, who can I follow up with? You know, my goal is to walk out of there at the minimum with a name.
Yeah. Name or a business card.
Yeah. And then leave a business card behind, leave a, you know, some company information behind, and then make sure you follow up on that in a timely manner. And a lot of times those guys they're going to react positively to that.
So let's go on the complete other side. you have an existing relationship with a client. They know you. You're one of their go-to people. Are you calling on them, or once you've built a relationship, they know who to contact? I mean, do they contact you to troubleshoot problems? I mean, how does the relationship develop?
Yeah, well, once that relationship is developed, you know, most of my customers reach out to me, you know, when they have questions, or if, you know, they're having problems in the field, or if they're just, hey, I've got this project I'm working on, I need some help, you know, on the fasteners I'm going to use for. But I still think it's important, you know, to show up with my customers, you know, 2-3 times a year to walk in the door. I mean, it's hard to keep that relationship going when it's just over the phone. You know, I like to see these guys face to face. One of the biggest tools that I use that I get a lot of success out of is the Lunch and Learn. You know, I did one in your office back, I think it was August of last year. It's a perfect opportunity to go in and meet the project managers as a group. A lot of times you get to meet field supervisors. A lot of times you get to meet, you know, the production people and you know, out back, that type of thing. And that gives you an hour to an hour and a half where you can sit down and talk to these guys and you know, tell them what it is you know and how you can help them. You know, not that I'm here to sell you something, but I'm here to help you. And this is why.
Yeah, that's good. In fact, that's how we met. And we talked about this podcast then. I had known you prior, but I was impressed by the presentation. It was helpful to our people. And just for the sake of, you know, our audience, you know, from, you never know when you're going to need something or somebody. I contacted you, what, December or something?
Yeah.
Had a customer who is a, they troubleshoot problem projects and fix them to get them open. This was in New York.
Yep.
And to your point, it was not a curtain wall installer just because of the labor shortages. There was a curtain wall guy putting cover caps on and reglazing. And then there was a steel guy who was putting in fasteners. I mean, they were just buying fasteners from, I don't know, Lowe's or Home Depot or the local person. They were not only the wrong diameter, they were the wrong alloy. We didn't know what the alloy was. You couldn't identify them on the heads. And my customer, I said, absolutely not. You got to replace all those. Well, I don't have a source. Do you know a source? So I really appreciated you.
Yep.
Because I texted you or called you, and then you were on the phone with him. And next thing I know, like, I think within an hour, he goes, yeah, it's good. David's drop shipping them. Like, they'll be here tomorrow. And they replaced it and they remediated the whole job in real time. So it's great to have relationships. And I just want to say thanks for that response.
Oh, you're welcome. Anytime.
I mean, it wasn't a big order for you.
That's fine. You know, I don't look at it as always going after the big orders. I look at it as, you know, I'm out there to service this industry. You know, yeah. and teach them what they need to know about fastening and how they do that safely and how they do it, you know, to make sure that their projects are successful.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great example. You never know when you're going to need to connect the dots. So you mentioned, we were talking a little bit just very briefly beforehand, like fasteners are like the last thing people think about. Do you think people should approach it more early and often, or like, do you try to communicate that message to people? Is it just is what it is? Like, people are always going to call you last, even though they shouldn't. Like, how do you work with that?
Well, as far as the planning goes, you know, they need to start looking at that when they start their project, because a lot of times, you know, there may be a fastener that's been specified that is not a standard fastener. It's something that needs to be manufactured. And I can't tell you how many times somebody calls me and says, okay, this is what I need. I said, all right, it's not available. I could make it, but it's going to take me 4 to 6 weeks. You know, and they're like, well, I'm on site next week. What do I do? Well, at that point, now we're starting to look for a substitute. So it makes sense to at least initially look in there and see, is there anything unique about this, you know, these details, anything that might cause a problem on lead times? You know, obviously, you know, the fastener schedule, you know, the count is the last thing that they usually come up with. And we understand that. And we keep, you know, a pretty vast inventory of fasteners because of that. But it's those specials that always kind of throw everybody for a loop. You know, they just assume that, oh, well, if it's on a detail, it's got to be readily available.
And
it's not.
Are you selling bolts as well? Like 5/8 inch diameter bolts, 3/4 inch diameter bolts?
Yeah. We do hex head caps, screws, socket head caps, rivets, you know, anything that you could think of that you need to either assemble or install a curtain wall or storefront system is what we do. Now, we only sell fasteners. So like other suppliers, I'm not going to come in and try to sell, you know, power tools or, you know, safety equipment or fall protection. Yeah. We are what I call a fastener company.
Yeah.
There are other people out there or companies that sell fasteners, but we are a true fastener company. That's all right. We concentrate on.
That's a good differentiator. Talk to me about your lunch and learns. Are you presenting those to design professionals, architects, engineers on the front end and to manufacturers, installers, tradespeople? Who do you present those to?
Well, normally I don't approach architects, but I do work with, you know, companies like yours. I've made presentations down at CDC, you know, Rice Engineering, you know, all the guys that you could think of that would benefit for something like that. I do a lot of lunch and learns with the fabricators. You know, the last two lunch and learns, or last three lunch and learns I've done have been with Metalworks, Caudier, and YKK. I've got one scheduled with Oldcastle coming up here in a couple of weeks. So I do, you know, approach those fabricators, those national and regional fabricators. But I also do it for the guys that are buying these systems and installing them, you know, because they don't have to worry about what they put the system together with. They're the ones that have to install it in the field. And they're the ones that really need to be cautious on what they're using and where they're purchasing it. You know, so a typical lunch and learn will start with, you know, I talk a little bit about, you know, what a supplier should bring to the shelf. You know, I'm real big on, you know, every supplier, you know, you need to take a look at price, service, and quality, you know, and pick the two that you want the most, because no supplier can be the best at all. You know, if price is cheap, you're going to have to sacrifice something along the lines on that. If you want the best quality, you're going to have to pay for that. So I always tell them, you know, pick one of the three two of the three that are most important to you that you really want to concentrate on. I also spend some time talking about installing fasteners and what type of tooling should be used, because there's, you know, right now everybody loves impact drivers. You know, they're small, they're fast, and they're powerful, but it's not the ideal tool to put in small diameter fasteners, quarter and number 12 fasteners, because you can wring the heads off or crack them or actually burn out a drill screw using one of those. So I spent some time talking about that. And to be honest with you, John, when people have problems in the field with installing drill screws, I can usually solve that problem on the phone.
Wow.
You describe to me what's going on, and I've got a list of, you know, three or four things. Okay, we're going to start taking a look at this. You know, what's the thickness of the application you're going through? Do you have the correct point on your fastener? Does your point have the capacity to drill what you're wanting it to drill? You know, what type of material are you going into? What kind of tool are you using? How fast is that tool moving? And I can pretty much, you know, 99 times out of 100, you know, solve that for them, you know, right there on the phone. Sometimes it's a little bit more complicated, and then I got to go out to a job site, you know, and I'll do that as well. But, you know, I've been doing this long enough to know what the conditions are at the job sites and, you know, what these guys, how they operate out there to figure out what it is that they're doing. You know, from there, I talk a little bit about our manufacturing, you know, what we bring to the table, you know, what the type of product that we manufacture. I think I had mentioned previously, we manufacture a lot of stainless steel, 18-8 and 316 both. We do grade 5, a lot of type ABs, type Fs, self-drilling screws, those type of things, a lot of specials, one-time knockoff special, you know, maybe for a specific application that will never be made again. Some of our specials turn into product lines. You know, and people will, you know, they use it in one application and they wind up using it on several applications beyond that. And then I usually launch into this whole hydrogen-assisted stress corrosion cracking issue on the dissimilar metals and the galvanic reactions and what that hydrogen does and what it causes the fasteners to do. And then talk about how do we prevent that. You know, you can't stop the hydrogen from forming unless you stop using aluminum. You know, but what fasteners do we need to use to prevent you from having failures on a job site?
Yeah, that's good. Thank you for that. That's good to know. So if somebody wanted to learn more, they could talk to you. You could do a lunch and learn. You could make a presentation to them.
Yeah, they could reach out to me through LinkedIn. you know, and I'll be more than happy, whether you're a customer or not a customer, I'd be more than happy to come in and talk to people about that.
That'd be great. We'll have everything in the show notes. I want to go back to an early comment you made about when you entered the industry. Was there something, I don't think I asked this, was there something in particular that attracted you? I mean, but you know, I'm really fascinated by, let me give more context. I'm really fascinated by what people call, like people are starting to rediscover this old industries or boring businesses, or, you know, it's not a sexy business, like fasteners really, but you know, everything's held together by a fastener. Was there something in particular, like, was it the pace? Was it the context? Was it the product? Was it getting out to meet people? Like, what was it that attracted you to the field, to the industry?
Well, I like the idea, first of all, of selling a tangible product that was going to be a repeat buy for a customer. You know, not a one-time in-the-door, out-the-door type of thing, but something where you're going to build a relationship and actually become a supplier for that company. I also like the fact that, you know, as you work on some of these buildings out there, you know, it makes me proud to drive by a building saying, you know what, I supply product on that building. You know, they had a problem in that building and I was able to help them through that product. You know, and over the years I've made job site calls in, you know, Manhattan, you know, on high rises. I was involved, you know, when they did the Hard Rock Hotel down in Fort Lauderdale, the guitar shaped one. Yep. I was involved in that one with Elko, with us, some products that were being used. I've supplied product on stadiums, you know, you name it. You know, we've supplied product for that. But it was just the fact that, you know, I wanted to go out and build a relationship with my customers, you know, and a long term repeat relationship. And to help them out and help them to be successful.
That's great. I like that. Many people that I talk to, and me included, I love the tangibility of what we do. But, you know, in the built world, you know, same thing. You can go, yeah, our people, and we engineered that, or we designed that, or we helped get that installed, and it's just fantastic. I know my family gets tired sometimes of saying, yeah, we know, you've told us 13 times that you guys, you know, did the engineering for that building. But it's just, yeah, it is really cool to do that. So thanks for that.
As far as it being boring, John, you know, to me, no 2 days are alike. It's always something different. You know, when I wake up in the morning, I usually have a to-do list of things I need to get done or people I need to see. But things come up during the day, you know, and you never see them coming. You don't know what they are and you don't know how fast you need to react. But there's nothing that feels better that you get a call out of the blue from somebody who's got a problem, you know, like you had mentioned with a guy in New York, you know, and within an hour you've solved his problem and he's moving on to what he needs to do next.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it's not boring to me and it's not boring to those who know what we're talking about. But on the outside, a young person who doesn't yet know what they want to do, or maybe a person changed careers, they might, I think, gosh, that just sounds horrible, but it's about the people. It's about the applications. It's about the relationship. It's about the tangibility. And yeah, that is a beautiful thing. You know, in the end, no matter how high tech your business is, if you're a human being, whether it's a cave, a tent, a straw house, a custom curtain wall clad, but you've got to live in a structure with a reasonably steady temperature and humidity.
Right.
I'm not talking about, if you're a farmer, and God love them, I love being outside, working outside, you're going to be outside all day. But somewhere or another, someplace, your product or service or whatever it is housed in something. And so you can't get away from the built world. I was listening to somebody the other day. They're asking somebody, you know, I think it was on a Twitter stream, you know, what in the world attracted you to construction? And the person was like, same reason, like everybody has to be in something, inside something, sheltered from something. And there's trillions of dollars of assets in North America alone, trillions of dollars. Meta's servers are all in a building. Microsoft's cloud is all in a building, and fasteners and aluminum and glass and steel, and it holds them all together. So to me, it's like, It's awesome. It's like the spine, you know? So
that's right. Because, you know, all those businesses without a roof over their head would not exist.
Yeah. I mean, it needs to be protected in a controlled environment. Anyway, and enough of my rant. That's really good. So I asked you about cold calls. I said, this must align with your energy or unique ability in some way. When you left, when you were excused from DeWalt and you were thinking about what you wanted to do, what was it that drew you back, like that desire, like you knew you wanted to get back into the field and like interacting with customers and not just filling out spreadsheets? Like, is there a particular appeal to you about that?
You know, it's being outside, not being stuck in an office behind a computer. It's out there meeting new people, creating those new relationships. You know, at Elko, I spent a lot of time training our distributor base, but, you know, these guys are being pulled 100 different ways, you know, and I felt like a lot of these, you know, within this industry, a lot of these people weren't being serviced, you know, with the knowledge that they really need to make their projects successful. You know, so I wanted to be able to take what I know and really kind of take it out to the guy that's, you know, out there doing the work, putting these buildings together.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that is good. Being connected to the work. Yeah, some people need to be and some people don't, but that makes sense to me. Are you seeing any particular trends in your region? What is my specific, but are you seeing any specific trends in terms of volume increase or reduction in opportunities for buildings?
Well, right now, a lot of my customers, their shops are full. They're doing a lot of work. I got a few that have slowed down, you know, and you know how it is in this business. You know, they're busy for a while. They finish up some buildings. They got some time before the next one starts. So it's kind of up and down. But for the most part, there's a lot of building going on out there. Now, I'm not seeing as much high rise as I have in the past, but there's a lot of, you know, more of the lower rise. There's a lot of hospital work, a lot of university work, you know, that type of work out there. A lot of hotel work going on right now in the hospitality industry. You know, what as far as the type of products they're using, I'm seeing a lot of details or a lot of specifications now being written around two things. One is grade 5, and the other one is 18-8 stainless, but with 100 KSI tensile. And I'm seeing those pop up more and more on details. Now, probably the grade 5 more than others. And when I say grade 5, everybody thinks grade 5 bolts. They think of drill flex. But I'm talking, you know, grade 5 type ABs. You know, 12, 14 by inch and a half hex head type AB, they're calling out grade 5s because they want that 120 KSI tensile strength. You know, I'm seeing it at type F screws. I'm seeing it in machine screws. I'm seeing it at all kinds of screws that they're just starting to write these specifications around grade 5. Now, a lot of that product isn't readily available, but one of the things that we have done at Alloy is we have developed a product line called AllFlex. And our AllFlex is the stainless steel, the 18-inch stainless steel that meets the 100 KSI tensile specification. Stuff you buy off the shelf coming out of Taiwan, it's probably going to be about 85 KSI, but they're looking for that stronger part. And then we have AllFlex G5, which is the grade 5 version of that, that meets the 120 KSI tensile spec.
That's really good to know.
Yeah, we're seeing that, you know, there's a need starting to build for this, and they're starting to ask for this type of product.
Okay, that's really good to know. About particular cities, you mentioned Philadelphia, Miami, Chicago. Sounds like you don't typically get to New York and Boston, or
I don't. We have a sales rep that lives up in Rhode Island, works out of our headquarters, and he handles a lot of the stuff up in New York. You know, there's so much going on up and down the East Coast. You know,
There's only so much you can do.
I've spent time in New York. It's fun working in New York, going on those buildings. But it's a chore working in New York.
It is. It's its own ecosystem. It's its own
It's not easy. It's not easy. But, you know, right now, you know, I'm probably spending most of my time. There's a lot of work going on in the Carolinas, in Charlotte and Raleigh. You know, I've been spending a good bit of time down in Atlanta. There's a lot going on down in Florida. Now, some of my other customers, they may be, you know, doing business you know, outside of their immediate area. So I do spend some time, you know, up in the Cleveland area. And then, you know, up in Philadelphia, my customer up in Philadelphia, most of their work is either in Philly or in New York.
That's good. Well, when you're in the Cleveland area, stop by.
Absolutely.
You mentioned metalwork. So you're talking in Kennett Square, like you're talking metalworks, yep. Like Steve Schar and the gang there.
Yeah.
We're doing some work with them again. And it also is involving the Techniform block. Are you familiar with the Techniform?
I'm familiar with Techniform. They're a customer of mine. I know William pretty good. You know, I have not met William face to face. But I feel like I have. I talk to him, you know, once, twice a week.
William's a great guy.
Yeah.
You know, William told me, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, I just like got to give him props. I don't think I heard this incorrectly. So I think it must be virtually and in person. William told me that he spoke to and or called on 700 architects last year.
Wow.
700.
Wow.
Not by email. Like, somehow interacted with 700. That's a lot of people.
That's an amazing number.
Like, yeah. Let's see. There's only 46 working weeks in a year. And yeah. I mean, he's a warrior. I like him. I was involved in the development of that product from the start. So I'm really glad to see it.
Yeah, that's actually the Techniform product. I have a fastener that I supply then. It's a special made by Elko. And I started working on that project in 2009.
Okay, so you started the. I didn't even know you then, but we were actually working in parallel because they needed a 4.5 inch or a 4.25 inch long drill flex.
Yep.
And that was one of the keys to that product. So I didn't know that you were behind the scenes there, or maybe I did and I just wasn't recognizing because there was a lot of moving parts then. But yeah, 2009. Yeah, that would have been early. That would have been very early on in the actual ideation of the project.
Yeah, that's when I made the first samples for that. In 2009.
Yeah, long ago.
So I was thrilled when I came to Alloy and found out that hey, they're an Alloy customer and they're ready to kick this product line off.
Wow,
so at that point all your hard work is worth it.
You sound like a natural when it comes to communication, but do you have any particular challenges in communicating your message about I think passion and energy is contagious, and you have that. Like you put the zip and the zing in buying fasteners. But is there any particular challenge you face in communicating your message to people?
Well, you know, time is always a big challenge. You know, working with a lot of my customers, you know, these project managers, their schedules are pretty packed. You know, they don't always have time to spend on sitting down and listening to what's happening. A lot of times if they delay on what they need to do, they wind up buying something locally, you know, and the worst thing I ever hear is when I ask somebody, well, what did you do for this application? Well, we needed something quick. So the guys in the field bought something. Well, what did they buy? I don't know. And it makes me cringe, to be honest with you. It really does.
Yeah. You really don't know what's there.
Yeah. You know, so it's that, you know, trying to find a piece of their time during the day and track them down. The other one is cost, you know. It seems like they never put enough money in the budget for fasteners on a particular project. You know, so a lot of times people will call me and they're looking for a specific fastener and they need to buy 5,000 of them. It's like, guys, these things are $2 a piece and they got $1,200 in the budget for it. You know, so it's a matter of them understanding what some of this stuff costs, you know, and making sure that there's enough money in the budget for that, you know, and then the other one is that, you know, unfortunately, there's other people out there that have built great relationships with their customers as well. And sometimes it's a little tough to get in the door.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I hear you.
We keep trying. I mean, I can tell you stories of, you know, companies I've called on for 5 years before I ever got a purchase order out of them.
Oh, yeah.
If the opportunity's there and you feel like you have a service that can help them, you got to keep on doing it till it comes to the point where they say, I see you more than my regular supplier.
Yeah, I always go, like, I go back to the parable. Sometimes I go back and tell people about read the New Testament parable of the woman begging bread to the unjust judge. You know, like, okay, fine. I like, yeah, fine. You're persistent enough. Like, there's a line between annoying and persistent, but it is good to be persistent. I've had similar experiences, I would say, to people listening, to never give up, because one particular client I called on 3 years before we ever got our first order from them, for design and engineering work. And when we got it, they had moved to a new location and had some new leadership team members, but a person that was still hanging on there from the past that was kind of had 6 months left, they had kind of recommended us. And then the person called us and turned into a proposal and a sale. And then the rest is history, you know? So like you say, you never know. It could be years before you bear fruit. But I find that no relationship or no relationship interaction ever goes void, ever goes without some fruit, because somebody knows somebody who knows somebody who can connect some dots or remember, oh, I talked to that guy, and it may not be a direct result. I don't know if you've had this experience, but I've had many collateral consequences or not direct consequences from interacting with somebody, and then somebody else, and I don't even know who they are. They're like, oh, so-and-so told me to call you. Have you had that happen?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I get a lot of that. You know, it's, you know, this business, it's a small world. You know, the people that, you know, who know other people, or stuff you supplied on a project that somebody else has been out there. And, you know, I find, you know, I've got some small customers down in Alabama that did some work for a customer that's doing a high rise in New York. I said, they outsourced some custom work, you know, for us, and we fabbed some panels for them and sent them on up there. And it's like, well, geez, I didn't even know you guys knew each other. But everybody in the industry knows everybody.
Yeah, that is good. If a person wanted to consider doing what you do, like how many days a week, like do you have a pattern? Are there days where you're completely in office and other days where you're completely in field? Or do you have a pattern where you're 3 days a week, every week in the field? Like, how does that work for you?
Well, that has changed a little bit, you know, since I've been here at Alloy now for 4 years and I've developed a customer base. When I first started with Alloy, I was in the field 4 days a week, every week, you know, just getting out there. You know, now, you know, it's split. I'll spend, 1-2 weeks in the office and then maybe a week out in the field. Now, my weeks out in the field are usually pretty full weeks. You know, it's Monday to Friday. Because if I go into an area, I'm going to spend as much time as I need to in that area. But, you know, once you start building those relationships, it doesn't require that I show up, you know, every month, walk in the door and talk to these people. You know, you got to keep that communication open. But, you know, I look at it this way. I'm not going to sell anything to these guys that they don't need to buy.
Yeah, right.
You know, so when they're ready to buy it, I just want to make sure my face, my voice, and my name is, you know, right on top of the list.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
One other thing I do for my customers, you know, and I don't know if sometimes some of these guys get annoyed with me, but when I quote a project, I follow up on that quote until they tell me either we bought it from somebody else or the spec had changed. We're not doing that now. And the reason I do that is you'd be amazed how many times I reach out and my customer says, I didn't place that order already. I said, no, you didn't. We talked about it, but you never placed it. And they're like, oh man, thanks for reminding me. I forgot. And the worst thing is to get on site, all the material shows up and you don't have any fasteners to install anything.
How quickly do you typically follow up? Do you have a certain timeline at which you follow up?
I usually, once a quote goes out, you know, on a project, I'll give the guys, you know, a day or two and follow up to make sure that they got it. You know, have you looked at it? Do you have any questions? And then it's usually about, you know, every 2 weeks, I try to ask the questions on, hey, when does this project start? You know, what's the project? When are you supposed to be on site? You know, how much lead time do you have if it's a special order or a special manufactured product? So I try to every couple of weeks run through that list and reach out to these customers. And, you know, some of them say, well, yeah, I'm going to buy it. You know, I got to place that order. You know, but they're busy, you know, and the last thing I want is to let them down and them not have what they need when they need it.
I'm really glad you brought this up. That is so true. We talk about that here. Things don't sell themselves. Some things sell themselves. You know, you need toothpaste, you go buy toothpaste, you know, but things just don't. If sales didn't matter, then everything written on paper and price would be the only thing that was out there, right?
Right.
And follow-up has such a direct, I do the same thing. I or the people that are our delegates here that are doing proposals, I say, you need to follow up within 24 hours. And so I'm like, why would I follow up so quick? No, trust me, I've been doing this a long time. Follow up within 24 hours. To your point, some would say, I didn't even get the proposal. Must have gone to my spam filter. Or I didn't even see that. When did you send it? And then we send it. Oh, I get it. Or they're misinterpreting something. Or we forgot something. Or and then, like you say, the intel involved. Even in the no, even when somebody says, no, not this time, would you tell me why? And they'll be pretty clear. Like, I'd rather know than not know. And I'm not going to be offended if you tell me no. I just want to understand, is this something, should I be trying again, or am I wasting your time and wasting my time? And I follow up has a direct impact. We do the same thing. We'll follow up until we get a yes or a negotiated purchase or a, no, that went away, or we're not interested, or we're not going to go. So kudos to you. That's great. You got to follow up regularly.
Yeah, absolutely. Pressing, like I said, these guys are being pulled 100 different directions.
Yeah.
And the last thing they're thinking about is what they need fastener-wise.
And then the other thing we all hear all the time from our trade subcontractor clients on down, and even contractors, but the further down the chain, is like, yeah, I need a price. They're expecting a release in 2 weeks, and then I'm going to need you to start by X. And then 4 weeks later, well, they're still looking at the price. And then 6 weeks later, well, they're going to issue a letter of intent. And then 8 weeks later, well, I'm still waiting for the letter of intent, but they said it's coming, right?
Yeah.
It just drags and drags and drags.
And then
when you get the LOI, they're like, you're behind. You better get moving right now.
Well, I always make sure my customers understand that lead time starts when you place a purchase order.
Exactly.
You know, I can't give you a 4 week lead time and you call me in 3 weeks an order and expect it next week. It doesn't work that way.
Exactly. Like, there is a lead time, even if it's an inventory. I've got to pull it, I've got to pack, so I've got to ship
That's
it.
That's right.
It takes a minute to get there.
That's right. I didn't pack it. It's sitting here waiting for you to order it.
Yeah, that's true. I think everybody knows that, but you're right. Then you miss
and
something.
And I think people are getting a little bit better working with lead times, you know, since, you know, the last 3 years with the global supply shortages and things like that. Some of the lead times that have, you know, been pushed way out there. I mean, some of these lead times that we were seeing from vendors overseas, I mean, we were looking at 10, 12 months on delivery on some stuff.
That's ridiculous.
You know, and I think people are getting a little bit better on doing a little bit more planning and understanding that, well, this isn't available, but where I can help is, okay, then what do we need to do on this project?
Yeah.
You know, you need a certain kind of bolt. You know, it's got to have a coating on it. It's not available. It's going to take me 3 weeks. If you need it next week, what else can we look at?
That's good. So you're really a solutions guy. I mean, you're just solving problems for people. You happen to be solving problems using fastening components. We're coming up to the end of our time, believe it or not. I said it moves quickly.
It does.
Let's move to the personal side. You know, I'm always interested, like, anything you do for hobby or recreation that you enjoy?
Well, you know, John, I love to be outside. You know, I don't like to be cooped up. So I camp, I fish, I like to target shoot, I like to hike. I've got some favorite places down here in North Carolina, and I like to spend as much time on the lake as possible. You know, so anything outdoors like that with my family, you know, I've got a large family. I've got 7 kids, you know, there's never a lack of somebody to do something with.
That's for sure. Good you for know, you. 7 kids. Any grandkids yet?
Not yet. We're still waiting for the first ones to come around. But, you know, I look at it as, you know, in the course of the day, it's emails, it's phone calls, it's driving in traffic, it's going through the airport. And my time off, the last thing I want to do, and I don't want this to sound bad, the last thing I want to do is be around a lot of people.
Yeah. You know? Or sit behind your desk and do administrative work, right?
Yeah. You know, so to me, you know, getting on the lake at sunrise is the most relaxing thing to me in the world.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you mean you actually get up earlier or at the same time on the weekend on your free time as you do during the work week?
I do. I get up at the same time every day. On the weekends, I may sleep an extra 30 minutes, but I get up same time every day. You know,
it's counterintuitive. I said one day, why in the world, and again, I'm just goofy, why in the world would I want to, unless I don't have any plans and the weather's over, why in the world would I want to sleep in on Saturday? I never could sleep in anyway. Wow. This is free time. Like, get at it. Like, because right. You're working 5 days and you're off two or four and three or whatever it is. So that's
You've always got a project list, you know, of stuff you need to do.
Yeah. What about, do you read at all or do you listen to books on tape? Like anything you're reading?
You know, when I travel, I listen to a lot of podcasts, you know, I like to listen to the financial industry out there. I'm a big Dave Ramsey fan, you know, and the way he approaches people's personal finances. You know, I have a hard time listening to music when I drive. It just, you know, I like almost feel like I'm interacting when I listen to things like that.
I get you. Yeah. I used to like to listen to music exclusively when I drove and sing and listen to music and sing. And now sometimes I just can almost tune out talking sometimes. It's almost like it just, it has a different effect.
And you know, sometimes when I drive, I just turn everything off and just listen to the road noise, you know?
Yeah. Do you, and maybe you don't, and that's okay, but I always like to ask people, do you have any particular routines that ground you that you do every day or consistently, like a morning routine or an exercise routine or a mental muscle routine? Is there anything you do that kind of helps kind of orient you the way you like?
Well, you know, to get my day started, you know, I always, you know, usually get up around the same time. We have a couple dogs in the house, so those dogs get walked every morning. One meal I cannot absolutely miss is breakfast. I've got to eat breakfast every day, you know, so even before anybody else is up in the house, I'm cooking my breakfast, you know, getting the dogs out, kind of getting my morning started. I like to start early, you know. I'd rather start early and finish early than start late and finish late.
Yeah, I hear you. I like it. Yeah. Just, there's different camps, you know. I like getting up early before everybody. Even if I'm sacrificing a little bit of sleep, I prefer to get up before the world is completely coming at me.
Well, and I do that on vacation as well.
Yeah,
when I'm
me
on
too.
Vacation, I'm up early. You know, like I mentioned to you, I like to camp. When my son and I go camping, I'm up at sunrise. I'm out on the boat and I'm fishing. And then a couple hours later, he'll call me and say, okay, come pick me up. You know, because I'm not going to waste that time.
I love it. Yeah, that's really awesome. Good for you. You sound like a real family man. Well, we've done it again. We're over an hour. Anything else you'd like to say before we sign off?
Well, John, just I want to thank you for this opportunity, you know, to explain a little bit about what I do. You know, anybody that, you know, needs some help that you think I may be able to help you out, or if I can provide any service to you, you know, feel free to reach out either through LinkedIn or through the notes at the end of the podcast. You know, and you, John, anything I can do to help you guys out of Wheat Spray, you know, you got my phone number. Don't ever hesitate to give it to anybody.
I've got your card back here on the desk along with in my phone and on my computer. And I appreciate that. And the same goes for you. Anything I can do to help you at any time, don't hesitate to ask personally or professionally. Just happy to do whatever I can to help support you and your cause. Thanks for explaining things about those elements that not everybody thinks about fasteners and bolts and anchors and screws and all those things. So, ladies and gentlemen, he's David Raskoski, Raskoski. You can look him up on LinkedIn. He is with Alloy Fastener Inc. That will be in the show notes along with his LinkedIn profile, their website, their LinkedIn profile, etc., any of the social media posts. I'm John Wheaton, the host of the Creating Structure podcast. You have just listened to another hour plus of this podcast, and I appreciate you. Thank you. We're signing off. Have a great rest of the day.